Broadcasting live from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette. 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes on this glorious Tuesday. Feels like a Monday morning for most of us. We did not have a show yesterday. It was kind of a long holiday weekend. Hopefully you had a good and a safe one. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Welcome. The Astros had their first off day in 3 weeks yesterday. And last week, they got swept at home by the Orioles, which was pretty disgusting. Not altogether shocking in that it's the fourth time this year a last place team has swept the Astros. So it's, you know, it's happened more often than you would think that it should have happened. But I went to Cleveland. Anytime the Astros play a team with a winning record in a four-game series, or really anyone, but especially a team with a winning record, my first goal was always to split, at least split. And then if you can win three out of four, great. If you win four out of four, it's just silliness. I mean, that's just silly. So silly good, and that's exactly what happened. You know, it was not a star-studded weekend. I mean, the Astros did not have for the series. You know, Michael Brantley didn't play after Thursday's game. El Pedro Grande, Yordan Alvarez was out all weekend on paternity leave. Martin Maldonado was out on a bereavement list. I never heard, like, someone in his family obviously must have passed away. I never got the details of that, but he was out all weekend. Kyle Tucker, was out all weekend with back spasms. So, I mean, you were playing in three of these four games without five starters in your lineup. Now, the difference is the Indians only were without one main starter, and that's their best hitter in Ramirez, which, you know, it's a lot easier to get the Indians out when you don't have to face Ramirez. Now, the flip side was their injuries, though, their numbers were in their rotation. Their top three starters are all out right now with injury, including Bieber. So, you know, it was basically a battle of AAA teams for most of the weekend. And fortunately, the Astros were able to, you know, they crushed their face on Thursday, and then they just won close games and were able to sneak out, what, 3-2, 4-3. It was, and they finally won an extra inning game, which hardly ever happens. Finally, the other team was not able to get the runner to third. They tried to bunt, and they bunted into a double play. So, you know, it wasn't looking good there for a while at times, but they were able to get four out of in a row over the Indians, which is good. Now they had a day off. Stubbs and Solomon and Garza are going back down. So, theoretically, Brantley's going to be back up, and we'll see all what happens there. They play the A's, who have been chasing them for a while, who they've chased most of the season, and who has been chasing the Astros in the last couple weeks. The A's are now 3.5 back. The Boston Red Sox have been the Astros' friend. They've got some wins over the A's. You know, and ironically, the Rangers have been the Astros' friend of late as well. The Fighting Shohei Ohtanis are 9.5 back. They got beat by the Red Sox last night after the Red Sox had a couple wins over the A's. So, I, you know, it's nice watching it kind of makes you feel good. You know, the National League is going to play up. They think the only division in baseball is the ESPN divisions, the American League East and the National League East, which I call the ESPN divisions. They think that's all of baseball. So it's nice to see the Red Sox crush, you know, beat the Angels and beat teams like the A's when you need them to. Knowing that you beat them 5 out of 7 and all these great, you know, you got all these great hot hitters like Devers and Bogarts and all them. And you say, well, we got those people out. What's wrong with y'all? Can't get them out? That's kind of fun. Anyway, so we will sometime in the second hour, perhaps. About a month ago, on June the 1st, a little over a month ago, is the first time we looked at the standings. I try to do that each year. I try not to look at the standings until June the 1st. Give you about 2 months for things to play out a little bit. And we haven't talked much about the standings since that day, obviously. We don't analyze the standings every day. So I figured today might be, we're back from the 4th of July weekend. Got a little bit of time, a couple weeks before we get to football media days and really start talking about particulars. So we might glance at the standings again for the second time this season, just to kind of see where things are. A lot has happened since June the 1st. Like, a lot has happened. And so we'll talk about that a little bit in the second hour, just to kind of update me and you on that. I did say last week, however, for those of you who are getting a little tired of us just talking about the NBA, and look, the finals start tonight. 8 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock Thursday, 7 o'clock Sunday, all on ABC. So, and if you want to talk about the NBA finals, certainly feel free to call and do that. Phone number 706-0111. But I did say that I was, once we got back from the 4th of July weekend, I had been putting off, you know, kind of Saints, NFL talk. I was going to start talking about that some. So we haven't really talked about the Saints in a while. You know, we talked a lot about it before the draft, but since the draft and, you know, a week or so right after the draft, we talked mostly about baseball and, you know, all the craziness going on with college sports and the NBA. So it is July now. The 4th of July is in our rearview mirror. And so training camps are going to be starting for some people a little over 2 weeks. And so we will kind of start talking about the Saints some in the next segment. And, you know, I've been listening to what a lot of people are saying. The positives. Some people have been are really negative. So I just want to look at a few of the positions that I think I'm perceiving that some people are really concerned about and kind of give you my opinion of where we are, you know, at this time of the year. But, no, it was, look, great. I did not expect to win 4 out of 4. Very excited about this week. You're coming home. Again, you play the A's for 3. That starts tonight. You can hear that right here on 103.7 The Game. And then you've got the Yankees for 3. And it's kind of been a subplot lately. Got quite a few Yankee fans that call the show and listen. Nothing happened over the weekend that made them not want to panic even more. Did have get a nice salvage win in the second game of the doubleheader on Sunday. But Gerrit Cole didn't look good again. You know, the Mets got the best of them. The Mets beat the red-hot Brewers again yesterday. So the Mets are doing well, but the Yankees are still a little bit on the struggling side. It's still early, and we'll get some details in the next hour when we look at the standings. But it will be very interesting to see how the Yankees play in Houston and if the Astros can go into the All-Star break on fire, because they could really get a little separation here. They could really get some separation from the A's. Now, I don't expect the Astros to sweep the A's, and I don't expect the A's to sweep the Astros. The first goal here is to win one game. You know, if as long as you don't get swept, the worst you're going to finish the series out. You're going to if you lose two out of three, which is possible. You know, you'll be 2.5 up. That's not the end of the world. You lose one game. It's not good. It's not the end of the world. But if you win two out of three, then you're 4.5 up. It's starting to sound a little better. And if one sweeps, obviously, it makes a huge difference one way or the other. I mean, if the Astros, it's just amazing how that works. The Astros sweep, you're 6.5 up. Then everyone's going to be thinking that's insurmountable, which it's not. But if the A's sweep the Astros, then suddenly they're only a half a game back in a virtual tie. So you just want to win at least one over the next three. And if you win two, it'll be just tremendous. And then, you know, you can't bury the Yankees, but man, if the Astros would sweep the Yankees, and I don't, obviously, don't have any idea if that's going to happen. But if they do, that could force the Yankees into doing something that maybe they don't want to do. So we'll see. You know, there's a lot of panic in Yankee land right now, and I understand why. But it's a, very interesting to see how that's going to play out. So a big week for the Astros. So we'll be following that as well all week. And obviously making plenty of comments. But for now, coming off a glorious four-game sweep on the road against the Indians, and the Astros actually kind of own the Indians. You know, seems like every time they play the Indians, they look really good and play well or win. They didn't always look real good with their little AAA lineup. But the backup's just fabulous. I'm really getting it from my daughter, Riley, because she told me at the beginning of the season, Miles Straw's going to do well. And she calls him Ren McCormick. But Ren McCormick is way better, Dad, than you think he is. And, man, she has been right on both of them. And, look, I love being wrong. I love being concerned about a marginal player and they turn out great. I love that. So I have no problem with her throwing her being right. Of course, I like to tease her every time McCormick does something. I say, Riley, I don't know why you were doubting that guy so much. I told you he was going to be good. And that makes her really mad. So, but if the Astros are doing well, I can put a little rag in there. All right, we'll take a commercial break. We'll shift gears. Talk about the Saint for the first time in a long time next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Want to remind you the phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. Also, remind you to go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to win a $50 gift card to Half Shell Oyster House. Of course, you can't win if you don't join, so go to the website, join the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. All right. Again, football is right around the corner. We have, for most of the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks, we haven't talked very much football. I mean, we've talked about the quarterback situation here and there. Oh, by the way, I meant to mention, the answer and maybe George eventually gave you, Nick, the answer to your question, but the answer to your question is beyond board. That was McEnroe's rival. I mean, Connors kind of was, but
yeah, that was the guy who was what was he from, Sweden?
Yeah, Bjorn Borg was he was that was the rival. That was the fun. I don't really watch tennis anymore, but I've actually done in the 80s because of that rivalry. Where you get up and actually do breakfast at Wimbledon with the strawberries and the cream and all that kind of. I actually did that once or twice in the early 80s. And but no, I was, I guess I'm kind of a little bit of a nonconformist at heart. You know, everyone, so many people like Bjorn Borg. I rooted for McEnroe. I loved it. I called him tennis. And once he retired, I didn't really care about tennis anymore. But he And certainly didn't follow it. Although I saw some of the Boris Becker in that era as well. But no, McEnroe versus Borg was great because McEnroe was the angry, emotional American against the smooth. You know, Borg hardly ever spoke, and he was very smooth, and he wasn't very aggressive, and he just really, really talented. But no, that was fun. Then, of course, you know, I didn't pull for Nicklaus on the golf side either, so I pulled for Watson. But anyway, no, the answer to the question was Borg, and he was he obviously was a great player, and it's not like you hated Borg just because he didn't really do anything to hate other than beat you, but certainly never pulled for him. And just loved any time that McEnroe beat him. McEnroe was a lot of fun, I thought. Now, when McEnroe played Connors, it was fun too. I didn't really love Connors, but I liked him. I rooted for him more than I did Borg, for sure. But no, it was always kind of fun when McEnroe played Connors as well. But no, I do have some memories of Wimbledon. They're just not real recent. I was That was about 120 pounds ago for me. But anyway, I said I wanted to kind of – I've heard most of the off season about, you know, a lot of negativity having to do with the Saints. I'm a little bit surprised at how many national people are really down on them. Again – not shocked, but they always seem to talk about how great of a coach Sean Payton is. And none of us know what's going to happen. But my thing is, if Sean Payton is the offensive coach that everyone says that he is, and the defense doesn't just completely fall apart, then I'm trying to figure out how the Saints are going to just turn into being this terrible football team, like some people are suggesting. Like, Drew Brees has not consistently been the Drew Brees that we're going to talk about when he goes into the Hall of Fame in over 2 years. You know, he was hurt, missed a lot of games 2 years ago. He missed a lot of time last year. And even when he was playing, he was beat up half the time and wasn't close to his normal self. So, and it was limited. So it's been that Drew Brees that we all kind of are going to associate him with for years to come. He hasn't been that guy in over 2 years, not consistently. Now, there have been games here and there where he just looked like what we would call the old or vintage Drew Brees. There's like the game at Tampa this year. It was perfect. I mean, it was, you can't play a better game than they play when they crushed the little Bucks on the road. But So there have been games here and there where he looked really good. The offense looked highly efficient. It was what you would call vintage Drew Brees. But you haven't. He either hasn't been playing or he's been limited for most of the last two seasons. So if the issue that people are having, whether you are a national guy pulling against, you know, predicting a serious downfall, or you're a local Saints fan who was just very concerned, I'm not as concerned about that part of it. I understand it's all going to be about the quarterback. I also understand that if Jameis Winston and our Batman just totally plays awful, that's going to be a real problem. All that is true. I don't think that's going to happen. I think genius is smart enough not to put all of this on the quarterback that's replacing Drew Brees. I just don't believe that's going to happen. So while it is an issue, while I do have some concerns, I don't know that that's in my top two or three concerns, the quarterback position. And for everyone else, it's going to be number one. For those two reasons. One, the team has won without Drew Brees really being Drew Brees. The team has won without the fancy offense. You know, last year, not only did they not have Drew Brees, they didn't even have Plastic Man, Michael Thomas. Now, were they as good at the end of the year as we wanted them to be? No. Batman wasn't playing. He was out for the two playoff games. Drew Brees was still coming out, you know, trying to play, even though he had all these fractured ribs and collapsed lungs, and he didn't look good. I mean, they limped to the finish line offensively. Now, defensively, they did fine. The national media is not going to tell you how fortunate the Bucs were to win in New Orleans after getting beat double figures the first two times they played them. They were very fortunate. And they're going to tell you about how the great the offense was, that the Tampa Bay's offense didn't do very much in that game. They didn't. The Saints, in my mind, still kind of own the Bucs. So we'll see how that plays out this year. That's going to be a very interesting storyline. But I don't know that I would put the quarterback in one of my top three concerns. I'm very concerned about the cornerback position. Dane Chaponche mentioned that last week. You know, he made a comment somehow, you know, I go to bed many a night or get woken up many a night worrying about the cornerback position. So I would say my number one concern is the cornerback position. And for two reasons. One, because even when the Saints have good cornerbacks, they get off to awful starts. Like this past season. Do you remember watching, you know, that Green Bay game? Do you remember watching the Raider game? Early in the season when they just couldn't stop anyone. They were awful. And so that can't happen again. Because there's already going to be so much pressure on the offense because all the emphasis is going to be on the quarterback. And I get it. It's the first time in 21 years. It took the Saints 21 years to have their first winning season. All the negativity and this idea that so many people have. It took the Saints 21 years to have their first winning season. It's been 21 years since the Saints had a quarterback question going into a season like this. 21 years, same amount of time. It's been a long time. So I get why everyone's going to be talking about this. But they cannot afford for the cornerback play to be so awful like it's been so often in the first few weeks of a season. You remember what was that 3 years ago against Tampa? Fitzmagic came in and just lit them up, put up 40-something. For whatever reason, the defense and the cornerbacks are just not ready to play at the beginning of a season. I don't know what they do in training camp. I have no idea what they do in training camp. They're never ready to play. Now, you say, well, what about last year? Well, it was pretty obvious. Did they play pretty well last year in the opener? Yeah, they did. But it was pretty obvious after that season played out. It wasn't that they played well. It was that Tampa was that bad. Tampa's offense was horrible until this back half of the season. Tampa was just that bad last year. That ill-prepared at the beginning of the season. And it took them a while to get going. It wasn't just the Saints that they looked bad against in the first half of that season, offensively. So they cannot put even more pressure on an offense and a new quarterback by being awful again at the beginning of the year and then telling whoever the new quarterback is, we're assuming it's going to be Winston and this new offense, well, you need to score 40 or we're not going to win. You cannot do that. So that's my number one concern. And I'm not saying the defense has a history of playing bad, and then getting better, and then being really good at times. But this offense can't afford that. Can't afford it. So that's by far my number one concern, the cornerback play. And are they going to be able to continue to cut down big plays? All right. We'll take a commercial break. We'll come back. Give my second and third biggest concerns going into the season. Next, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Just decided, I said it last week we'd do it, or maybe the week before, when we got back from the 4th of July weekend, we talk a little bit about the Saints, and we haven't talked much Saints here since May, and you got to have a little bit of a break after, you know, obsessing about the NFL draft through the whole offseason. And then once it happens and you go through your undrafted free agent pickups, and you got to take a little bit of a break. And so we did that. And I've been listening to what people say and what people write. You know, the national shows, they don't take much of a break from the NFL. They just keep going with all the storylines. And every once in a while, they bring in the Saints. So I've listened to what they've said. And basically, I've got my biggest three concerns going into the season, and none of them are the quarterback. Not that I'm totally confident that they're going to get it done. I just don't think that the ceiling required for them to get to, or that line for them to get to, for the Saints to win double-digit games is as high as most people think, because I don't think the level of the quarterback play over the last two seasons has been that high. Now, I know that I'm comparing it to, as I said earlier, vintage Drew Brees from, you know, the mid-2000s to like 2016 or 17. I know I'm comparing it to that, but that's, you know, that's our frame of reference here. Since then, The level of quarterback play has not been that high. The last two seasons, it hadn't been because of injury. Just hadn't. When Bridgewater played, I mean, we all praise him, and I love Teddy, and I wanted him to stay and be the next quarterback. But it wasn't like his level of play was that high. They dummied down the offense and played defense and special teams and won. Wasn't about putting up numbers. It hasn't been about putting up numbers in the last two seasons. That's why it's not one of my three top concerns. Because I don't think they have to play at optimum level for this team to win double-digit games. Because we haven't had that. in the last 2 years. So my number one concern, as I mentioned, is cornerback play. Not because I don't think a Debo can be good. I just know that he's a rookie. And even if they turn out to be good, they cannot afford, as I said before the break, to be bad at the, for the first three or four games like they consistently are, because that's not what you, that's just not what this team needs. They need the quarterback not to feel like he's got to put up 40 to win like they did against Green Bay last year, like they did against the Raiders last year. They cannot afford that early on this year. Can't. That's not what you want to do. You want the, you want to ease them into this new era. You don't want to say, okay, you put up 40 or you it can't be. So my number one concern is cornerbacks, which is almost always my number one concern. My number two concern may sound like a cop-out initially, but I think team-specific, it's really not. Health of the wide receivers. Well, I guess you could say the number one concern for every fan of every team is the health of one key, one area or the team in general, and I get that. But with this particular wide receiver core, I think it's not just – it's real. The health of the wide receivers. I know a lot of people think that the wide receiving core is not good enough. But I am absolutely convinced that if they're healthy this year, that it is good enough. You know, Plastic Man Michael Thomas is an elite receiver, but he wasn't last year. He was hurt all year. Why? Well, two reasons. One, he had a medicine season because you don't catch 150-something passes. It's not a good thing to do. You know, he basically had a medicine season as an individual. The second thing is Sean Payton, while he does a lot of things well, he leaves good players in way too long. Drew Brees played way too many snaps, in my opinion, in his career. Number 41 plays way too much in the fourth quarter of games that are out of hand. You have to feel the team. You can't just sit down. But just like they are in the way that they sign players, like, you know, if you notice, like, they try to sign their key players, like they just got finished signing Ramchek, keeping that. Those core players don't need to be on the field when you're up by 20 in the fourth quarter and you're just running out the clock. What in the world was Plastic Man doing on the field running out the clock in the first in the fourth quarter of last year's season opener? They got to learn from that stupidity. So, obviously, he was out. I mean, he came back, but he was limping. He looked terrible. He looked terrible. There was no timing. It was all gone. So, there's that. Deontay Harris. He has incredible ability. He was on the verge of dominating that playoff game against the Bucs last year. Then he got hurt. It was unbelievable. It was like, man, this guy's going to have a career. And then he got hurt. He's always hurt. So he's a great weapon. A great weapon. If he's healthy. Tre'Quan Smith, he's hurt all the time too. So I think Tre'Quan Smith could have a huge year this year, but he's got to be on the field. You cannot make an impact if you're hurt all the time. Even Callaway, we love Callaway. He's had injury issues too. So the top four receivers are guys that, if healthy, I think this wide receiving core is good enough. But they have to be healthy. And none of them ever seemed to be healthy. You know, just when it looked like Callaway was taking off, hurt himself. Ankle. So I think, and really, I said number two, that might be number one. Might need to be the biggest concern, the health of the wide receivers. All these guys are always hurt. Now, to be fair, Plastic Man hasn't always been hurt. It just was last year. But again, he's coming off. He essentially missed, you know, I know he didn't, he played in games, but he wasn't himself all season last year. He had a medicine season, so he's got to bounce back from it. So I'm saying two, but I really think it actually might be one. The other one is one, the number three is something that we've talked about some, and I'm not nearly as concerned about three as I am one and two. But it is an issue if it doesn't get taken care of, and that is defensive tackles stopping the run. They lost Brown. I'm not as worried about Mr. Rankins because he's been largely hurt anyway. I think Malcolm Brown, we're going to talk a lot about Jenkins, the cornerback, being lost, and that's going to be discussed over and over and over again and with good reason. But this, most of the other losses that the Saints have had salary cap-wise really, to me, are not a big deal. The one that is potentially a big deal is Malcolm Brown. I thought he was great at stopping the run. Now, I think that with Gus, David Onyemata, Shy Tuttle, Malcolm Roach, and even Glasgow played okay at times. And by the way, another guy who's in Saints camp that many of you know but many of you may not realize is former Cajun Christian Ringo. I don't know if he's going to make the team or not. We'll see. But he's, you know, on the depth chart in camp. They signed him late last season. So, Tuttle has looked very good at times. And Roach. I mean, those are two guys that have had their moments. But those guys have to take care of the running game. Or the bulk of the running game. I mean, you know, obviously, two or three players, it's a defense. We get that it's a team thing. But they have to, the Saints have to continue to dominate opposing running games. Now, I don't care about this streak. Oh, they've gone all these games without giving up a 100-yard rusher. I don't care about all that stuff. All I care about is the team winning. Plenty of teams have rushed for well over 100 yards against the Saints. Just because one of them didn't rush for 100 yards as an individual, I don't care about all that. But they've got to continue to allow the defense to do the things that it's done the last two seasons, largely because they know that the bulk in that middle there has been stifling the run for a while now. That needs to happen. That needs to continue. If not, then so much more effort is going to have to be played to stop in the run, and that feeds right into my number one concern about the cornerbacks. So those guys have got to largely take care of the run like they have the last two seasons without Malcolm Brown there. I think there's plenty. I think Gus is going to keep getting better. So I'm not as worried about that one happening, but I think it's got to happen. Most people, their number one concern and number two concerns are quarterback and defensive end. I'm not as worried about that. And why is, I know a lot of people hated the Peyton Turner pick. I think he's going to, I don't expect him to be rookie of the year or anything, but I think he's going to be a good football player. I know a lot of people hate Davenport, who I'll now call Stinchcomb. But I still think he's going to be, I think he's going to have a breakthrough season. Plus, and by the way, speaking of this, hey girl. I don't know how to pronounce the big defensive end free agent pickup for the Chiefs. So real soon here, we're going to have to come up with a nickname for him. Not because he's earned a nickname or needs a nickname. Not because he's done anything particularly great or bad to have a nickname. But just because I don't really know how to pronounce his name. So this one's going to be real self-serving. We got to come up with a nickname for this cat. Passanon, or whatever his name is. I think he's going to be pretty good too. So I think the defensive end is going to be fine. I think too many people are worried about that. That position I'm not worried about. If all this other stuff takes care of it, no, we're not going to have any issues. So what most people have is their 1 and 2 concern is not in my top 3. Anyway, we haven't talked much Saints, so I wanted to kind of start off the post July 4th era here, stretch, talking a little Saints just in case some of y'all were a little tired of talking about the NBA and Major League Baseball all the time. All right, we'll take a commercial break, come back, finish out the first hour next. Stay tuned. Oh, welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you about our Tiger Road Trip giveaway. LSU's going to play UCLA in the Rose Bowl on this historic trip in 103.7 The Game. Wants to help you get there. Go to the clubhouse. Go to 103.7thegame.com. Join the clubhouse. You might win 2 round-trip airline tickets from Baton Rouge to L.A., hotel and airport transfers, game tickets, and an invitation to a Friday night party during this great trip where LSU is going west to play in the historic Rose Bowl. And Nick and I had this short conversation last week. Most people down here are SEC people. They don't really like the Pac-12 or the Pac-10, different eras. And, we joke about Flake Coast and all that stuff. And, they don't play real football and, all that. But Nick and I both agreed, and I'm sure a lot of you agree, too. There ain't too many fields that look cooler than the Rose Bowl. Love the Rose Bowl. Love the atmosphere there. Love the big numbers. I've just always thought the Rose Bowl was a beautiful scene for a football game. I even think it's awesome when, I've always loved UCLA's uniforms, too. And so even going back in the 60s, like when they showed the O.J. Simpson highlights, the USC just, it looks good. So it's real cool LSU to play there. And so a great trip. So go to the website, put yourself in position to maybe win one of those. Just a great prize. All right. So we only have about a minute left. Since we last spoke, last Thursday, a deadline passed where Aaron Rodgers, who's talking all this trash and getting everybody, could have opted out but did it. So, again, are we really going to do all of this talking and yapping the whole offseason about Aaron Rodgers and then he's just going to show up in Green Bay and he's going to play in the opener? I mean, there's the selfish side of this because I'm a Saints fan and they play the Saints in the opener. And then there's the, really, we're going to talk about all this? And so I'm starting to think it's all going to be about nothing. We'll see. But he put us in position for it to all be about nothing by not opting out. So we'll see how that plays out long term. That's it for hour number one. Another hour next, 103.7 The Game. Welcome into Footnotes, Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. On this glorious Tuesday morning, where many of us are kind of rebounding from a holiday weekend, it's glorious because the Astros did sweep a 4-game road trip to Cleveland. It was kind of it seemed like a Triple-A series at times, more than a Major League series, but it counts in the standings, so not worried about how it happened. I just love the end result, and there were some McCormick came through, a couple good pitching outings. couple clutch hits by guys that don't always, you know, Abraham Toro hit a big home run. I mean, last year got nothing from that guy offensively. This year he's given a lot more. So it's great to see. It's great when your great players do play well. But it's also great to see guys. My biggest concern, besides the bullpen, which we'll get to shortly, about this team, is that the backup players weren't good enough. And the truth of the matter is the backup players have delivered. McCormick has delivered. And Toro, who I had zero expectations for after a horrendous season at the plate last year, has delivered. I still don't really trust Robo Garcia, but he's had some hits. I mean, he's participated more than I thought he would. And so, no, it's great to see the backup players come through and perform well. And so that was great to see. Something that is a big deal for some people, it is no longer a big deal for me, but I don't want to totally gloss over, is they announced the All-Star rosters over the weekend. The Astros have four players. We talked a little bit about this last week in that I did not, you know me, I don't like Astro players getting, you know, big honors and all that. I don't really, I want my players feeling snubbed and where their motivation is as high, you know, as many chips on the shoulder as they possibly can get, all of that kind of stuff. But they had more players in the top. In other words, they got more votes from the fans around the country than I thought they'd get. Now, should they, considering that they have the best offense in baseball, should they have a starter or two? Probably so, but I'm glad they don't. I look at things a little differently than most of you. I'm very glad they don't. I hope that, you know, they already have a big enough chip on the shoulder with all the silly yelling that all these fans do to them. You would think eventually these fans would realize, you know what, I don't know that we're helping our team here by trying to trash these people through our lack of knowledge of that situation. I wonder if any of the fans, you know what, maybe we ought to stop yelling and cursing at them because it seems to be helping them. So, bozos, keep yelling and cursing at them because I think it does help them. But anyway, Michael Brantley, leading the American League in hitting for a lot of the first half of the season. He's hitting .340 right now. He didn't play over the weekend, so hopefully he gets back soon. Not a great power hitter, but and has actually been a little bit of a slump of late, but he's still hitting .340. And so I got no issues with him being in the All-Star game. Jose Altuve is the really unique one. He was horrible in the shortened regular season last year. Horrible. But there are a lot of reasons for that. I think a lot of guys were off last year because they didn't have their training going in. We found out after the season, and I don't even know exactly who they are, but we found out after the season that Jose Altuve had two family members close to him die at the beginning of the COVID stuff. That can affect someone. And, you know, the perception for most people was that he was a lot more sensitive to all of the criticism than most of the Astros were, and it's all of that seemed to affect him. Obviously, he came out of it in the postseason and played real well. And so far this year, you know, he's kind of been a bit of a slump of late. The last 3 weeks or so, as he had gotten his batting average to over 300, he's only hitting .284 right now. I really thought he'd hit 300, and he might still, but he's got 18 homers, 47 ribs, and they put him in the All-Star game. So good for him. Hopefully it'll get his confidence up. Just someone at the All-Star game needs to tell him to stop swinging at so many pitches. Carlos Correa is having, you know, his first month he wasn't really playing that well. Since then, he's been great. And I understand, you know, officially, he's hitting .295, he's got 16 bombs, 52 ribs, which is, you know, really well, really good for the first half of the season. The most impressive thing about Carlos is he's got well, besides his defense, he is a great defensive shortstop. He has the best arm on relays I think I've ever seen. He has 47 walks and 59 strikeouts. So he doesn't have more walks than strikeouts, but it's not far. And the things that the Astros do best, opposite of most of the rest of the Major League Baseball, they get on base and they don't strike out a lot. Now, they don't always drive the runs home. You know, that kind of stuff comes and goes, and that's baseball. But, no, they've done a great job, and Carlos Correa has been the poster child for that so far this season. So I got no issues with him. And then Ryan Pressly, the closer, as bad as the bullpen has been, he's been fabulous. He's 4-1 with a 154 and a 0.82 ratio. He's only walked 5 batters in 35 innings. So I'm very only 24 hits and 45 strikeouts. So Presley's done great. So let's take a phone call, and then I got some more to say about the relief pitching moving forward. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning, Devin. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. Devin, you know, talking about the Bucks Phoenix series, do you know when the Bucks won their only championship, they won it out of the Western Conference?
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Yeah, not much people know that. A little while later, they were switched. When in 74 they played, they were in the West by that time. Look, you know, you were talking about the Rose Bowl. Devin, I've been to the Rose Bowl once in the 80s, not during football season. You know, the stadium parking lot in the off season is a public golf course that I played at when I went out there to California?
The parking lot?
What's that?
You said the parking lot?
Yes, it's a golf course. It's well part of it, you know. But I mean, they use that parking lot as part of that golf course. It's a public golf course in Pasadena. And the you play some gold. You got the Rose Bowl right there next on the side of you.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I thought just really bad golfers like me and Seve Ballesteros played from parking lots.
Well. That day, they all came from the parking lot most of the day, Kevin.
Okay.
But going back to the Bucks Sun series, Kevin, you know, I really felt confident when the Bucks were going to win when Giannis went down. If you look at the Bucks' record during the regular season when Giannis went out, they were pretty good. The only one out of the big three was when he was out, it affected them the most was Holiday. Even when Milton was out, they did good. But evidently, Holiday is more valuable than the other two at the same time.
So really, if Giannis doesn't come back, it's all about Brook Lopez, right? He's got to play big.
If they give him the opportunity to do so, if they involve him in the game plan, they usually don't. They usually just want him outside and, you know, and then coming inside, protecting the rim and shooting outside. That one game against the Hawks, they were alley-ooping him and they were posting him up and driving and setting him up down low. They usually don't do that. But they did. And they, what I give this coach, and look, I'm not a big fan of him at all. What I give him this, what he did the postseason, he adjusted more times in different games, different series than I ever seen him done in his whole time out there in Milwaukee.
This guy has got his team in the finals and everybody bashes him. Really, this guy has gotten bashed through this whole postseason. So if he wins it all, it's not like the players are having that great of a postseason individually. And so, I mean, somebody's going to have to give him some credit if they win it all here.
Yeah, it looks like their assistant coach is going to be the Pelicans coach too, right?
That's what they
Isn't
say,
the
yeah.
One of the ones they're interviewing that's still left on the
yes.
table?
Yes, Lee, yes.
Yeah, that would be something there. But anyway, Kevin, you know, I'm just happy they're there, and I think it's going to be a well-played series. I don't think nobody's going to win it in 5 or even 6. I think it's going to go 7 again, just like they did the Brooklyn series. And I'm just going to enjoy it, buddy.
I don't blame you. By the way, you know, I'm sure there's some other Dodger fans who are also Milwaukee Bucks fans in this country, because the Dodgers are pretty much a national club, obviously, especially up in Wisconsin. There's probably some Dodger fans who are Bucks fans. But south of the Mason-Dixon line, our man right here, the FedEx man, you know, if the Bucks win it all, the Dodgers are the reigning champs. I mean, I don't know that there's too many Dodger Buck combos going on south of the Mason-Dixon line. Let's get to another call. Hello.
Hey, I'm changing gears back to football on you.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with Kai Harley?
Kai Harley, yes.
I'm surprised. Again, I read a great article on him in The Athletic. And for those that don't know who he is, a lot of us give Mickey Loomis a lot of the credit for working the cat match. But apparently he's one of the guys behind the scenes that just, in fact, the article was like when the Saints said they were $100 million over the cap heading into the season, most people panicked. Kai kind of laughed and just slowly got it done. And I don't think we're given enough credit for what they've pulled off this offseason, Kevin. I mean,
I never doubted it, though.
Over the cap, and the cap, again, a lot of our moves have been based on the assumption the cap is going to continue to go up. Well, COVID threw a major monkey wrench in that, and the cap went down. So we were already pushed up against the wall. Well, then all of a sudden the wall got pushed in on us. And, again, we lost some players. Granted, like you said, especially the defensive line, the tackles especially, kind of disturbs me. But, I mean, it had to be done. And the article, for those of you that don't subscribe to The Athletic, they got their own Saints writers, Catherine Terrell especially. But the article they did on him, basically, we talk about coaching trees. Well, Mickey Loomis is kind of starting a GM tree, which you really don't hear about a lot. And I think it's a credit to the Saints organization as a whole that we've got these executives now that are starting to get looked at and sniped by other NFL teams. And it really brings me a lot of comfort. I go back to the days where we were a clown show and so poorly run. I mean, I'm really dating myself there. But, again, we talk about Drew Brees spoiling us the last decade. I think Loomis and that crew have really kind of spoiled us as well during that time period, because we've really been a very well-run organization, and we've had some talent come through. Our drafts have been good. Our undrafted free agents, I think, are unmatched by anybody in the league. And it's these guys behind the scenes that have a lot to do with it. And it's just kind of remarkable watching us getting around. I mean, we lost Fontenot last year. We lost Pace a few years ago to Chicago. They're saying don't be shocked if Kai Harley ends up getting a GM job next year. And, again, these are African-American guys that are being put into GM positions, which I think is really admirable of the Saints organization as a whole and what they're doing, bringing guys in, developing them, teaching them. And they kind of the key to the Saints is they get out of the way. They give people responsibility, and they back up, and they let them run with it. And he's the guy that's just a team player. He's like, I don't need the credit. I just want to get it done. My job is to help the team win. And the article was really insightful, and it made me feel good. The point of the call is it really made me feel good about being a Saints fan. And this year of transition, you just talked about it, it's going to be an offseason unlike any we've had in a while, a long while. And reading that article gave me a lot of comfort in the fact that they're just moving on.
Joey, we got to go to the break, Joey, but did Kai have the secret solution to keeping the receivers healthy?
I don't know, but he's got the solution to getting some more if we don't.
Okay.
So, God bless.
Okay. Thanks. Oh, man. I just hope these guys aren't hurt all the time. It's just going to really complicate things. The more I think about it, I think I'm moving that up to number one. Receivers have to be healthy. Just have to be. All right. We'll continue a little bit more baseball talk. And look, if you want to call and talk about the Saints or football, certainly feel free to do that as well. We'll be back 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. We did talk a little football. Talked about the Saints for the first time in quite a while. And before we get back to finishing off the topic from the first segment, Want to remind you to go to our website, 1037thegame.com. You could win a $100 Google Play card for books or movies or whatever you would like it for, but you can't win if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com, join the Rewards Club, and you might win a $100 Google Play card. All right. The fourth Astro name to the All-Star Game, as I was saying, was Presley. And he's been great. The relievers in front of him have been not great. And at times have been outright terrible. Now, while it's not fun to go through, I'm not totally pressing the panic button on what I have called the ball pin, which, they, to be fair, they've gotten a little bit better at not throwing so many balls. Because there's supposedly help on the way. Now, just because a guy like Pedro Baez, who was the Astros' number one acquisition in the offseason, he hasn't even played a game yet because of COVID and other injuries. Just because he comes back doesn't mean he's going to stay healthy and pitch great. So they've got to prove it. Josh James, who I nicknamed Ball 4, which is a little bit of a quandary because, you know, why do they need someone whose nickname is Ball 4 to a bullpen that's trying to get better? I get it. What Josh James has is, you know, he's the kind of guy who can walk the bases loaded and then strike out the next three guys. You know, because he throws consistently in the upper 90s. So we'll see what he does. Hopefully somehow since last year, he is his fascination with throwing four balls to batters has been downgraded some. And the other thing is, most people would guess that if the Astros are going to sign someone, I mean, or trade for someone, I should say, before the end of this month, most people would think it would be a relief pitcher. The interesting part of that is the Astros just got finished playing six games with the Orioles. And I commented how ironic it was that as good as the Astros record is and as bad as the Orioles record is, that the Orioles bullpen is pretty, if you take out the closer, take out Presley, it's significantly better than the Astros bullpen. So whether it's a left-hander like Tanner Scott or a right-hander like Cole Sulcer, I'm wondering if the Astros were paying especially close attention to those guys as they crushed the Astros in those six games. Now, the team didn't. It was 3-3. The Astros won all three in Baltimore. And the Baltimore won all three in Houston. But those pitchers specifically pitched very well, even in Baltimore. So that's interesting. The Tigers have also done very well against the Astros this year. Gregory Soto, who throws really hard from the left side but has some control issues, and former Astro Jose Cisnero are guys that it would not shock me if they would pick. And the beautiful thing about that is when you're picking up middle relievers, you're not talking about stealing someone's. None of these guys are even closers, although Soto closes some. So theoretically, it shouldn't cost you that much to pick up a middle reliever in a trade. And, you know, that's so those are names to kind of keep an eye on if you're an Astro fan or just a baseball fan and monitoring what a team like the Astros is going to do. The other names to keep in mind are Richard Rodriguez, closer for the Pirates. And the name you hear more often than not is Kendall Graveman, who does close some, but mostly he's been a middle reliever for the Mariners. And, the Mariners are still in the playoff hunt, I would think. So, the Mariners are only seven games behind the Astros. They're five games over 500. So, I don't know. It might cost a little more to get a Graveman than it would a Sulcer or a Scott or a Soto or certainly a Cisnero. So, just something to throw out there. It's still a couple weeks. I mean, it could happen today, but more than likely it's going to happen after the All-Star break, which is a week from – the All-Star game, by the way, is a week from today. So we'll see how that plays out. But just a little expanding on Presley making the All-Star game. While he's been great, obviously the rest of the bullpen has been a disaster at times and been, you know, there's not a whole lot of reason to trust it. But those are some names that potentially the Astros could go for. And it's just the irony of these teams with bad records who have done pretty well at times against the Astros might have the secret to the Astros' success moving forward. We'll see how that plays out. All right, I said I wanted to look some at the standings, and we won't get to all of that here before the next commercial break, but I wanted to just point out a few highlights. One, obviously, the Red Sox now have the most wins in the major leagues. Who would have thought that at the very beginning? I still don't think their pitching is great. Now, Barnes and, you know, and some other relief pitchers have done very well on the back. Ottavino is pitching much better than this last year with the Yankees. So their bullpen has been good. Their starting rotation, I still don't think, is real good. So I don't – they obviously have one of the best offenses in baseball, except for when they played against the Astros. But against everybody else, their offense has been really good. And their bullpen has been really good. Now, again, I just don't know if their starting pitching's good enough to sustain this for the whole year, but we'll see. And then Chris Sale might be coming back. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Red Sox went out and got a starting pitcher or tried to. That's not the easiest thing to get before the trade line, but they might. The Rays, they're 4.5 up on the Rays. And I know the Yankees are panicking because they're only one game over 500. But 10.5 is a lot for July, but it's certainly not insurmountable. And once again, all you got to do is finish. You know, you could get a wild card. They're not 10.5 out of the wild card. So I wouldn't. I understand that the Yankee fans are panicking, and with good reason, but it still is early. The Indians, I think, can only make a run at the White Sox if they get some, their starting pitching gets healthy real quick. Like, they're six out. If they fall to, like, they're on a seven-game losing streak. Man, this is a critical week for them. They've got to get some wins. And they're having to play the Rays right now who have been on a losing streak and need some wins. So I don't know how exciting. I still say the team to watch out for is the Toronto Blue Jays. They're 9 out. They're 4 over. But if they get some help at the All-Star break, or right after the All-Star break, with pitching, starting pitching especially, their offense is really good. And it would not surprise me if the Blue Jays make a run if they can get some pitching help. But I don't think they can make the playoffs with their current pitching staff as it exists. I just don't think they can. But, man, they are. I'm not a big fan of old Canada, but I'm just saying, if you're a Blue Jays fan right now, that is a fun team to be a fan of. They got a fun team, and they just don't have enough pitching. And if they get some, look out, AL ESPN division. All right, we'll take a commercial break. We'll make some comments on the National League when we come back as we kind of take our second look at the standings of this season on 103.7 The Game. Back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3, 133 on LUS. Want to remind you about our Cozy TV package giveaway. Cozy TV is now available locally on KLWB Channel 50.5. You can watch all the TV's all-time best shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Things, shows like Frasier and Roseanne and Little House on the Prairie. You can, the game is celebrating the very new, cool, cozy 50.5 with prize pack where you can win bags and blankets and hats and socks and whatever you would like to cozy up during vacation, or especially when it gets colder in the fall. You can utilize that and watch all these great TV shows by going. And to win that prize pack, you need to text COZY, C-O-Z-I, that's COZY, C-O-Z-I, to 68683. All right. Then we had talked a little bit about what's going on in the American League. And one of the ones that we didn't mention yet is, I kind of mentioned the Angels. The Angels are a team, and I've been obviously kind of jabbing the Angels with some cheap shots here and there because of all of the everybody's talking about Shohei Ohtani. They are now 9.5 back, and they're 500. But I don't know that they can solve their pitching issues because they never seem to be able to pitch. But when Trout does come back, theoretically that's going to happen right after the All-Star break, they're going to have one of those elite offenses that if they could just find, they're going to have an offense very much like the Astros and the Blue Jays. They're going to have an elite offensive team if Trout comes back and is anywhere near to where Trout normally is. It's just, will they be able to get anyone out? And will they trade, will they try to add and help their pitchers, or will they get rid of some of their pitchers going into the trade deadline? So how they do in and around the All-Star break could really impact what the Angels do, and whether, you know, they tend to try to go for it, but man, it just they never seem to have any pitching. Just never seem to have any pitching. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Morning, Foot. How's it going?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm going to say in the famous words, Houston, we have a problem. There's trouble in paradise.
Well, you got to play two games on the 4th of July.
I know. I caught that. I thought something was wrong with my TV. I'm looking at the score at the bottom. I'm looking at, well, this game will come on late. I'm like, I think something's wrong. So it fooled me.
Yeah.
But now, I know you're probably feeling real good about your team playing my Yankees coming up now, huh? You feel comfortable about it?
No.
You really don't? Really?
Well, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm almost always cautiously optimistic because I've been around baseball. I just know. I mean, look. How confident were most people when the Astros, and I don't know, I got someone, when the Astros crushed the Orioles in Baltimore, and then the next week the Orioles, who are the worst team in baseball, come to Houston and crush the Astros three straight games.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Right, but I understand that. But the Yankees getting crushed week after week is a consistent thing going on right now on the down slump where everybody just beating up on the underdog.
The only thing that gives me anything other than normal confidence, because obviously the Astros have a very good team, is the fact that the Yankees' bullpen has been very shaky, especially in the back end.
The whole team been shaky. It's been terrible. That's what it is. The whole team now. Call it how you see it, but now, I have a question. Did you say the Boston Ugly Sox have the most wins in history?
No, the most wins in baseball right now.
Right now.
They have the most wins in May. If I said history, I didn't say that. They have the most wins in all of baseball this year, right now, so far.
How is that possible? I want a recount. They cheating some kind of way. I want a recount. Something going wrong. But they got somebody that's blind, can't see, or can't count in the office.
No, they got 54 wins. Now, they got some teams with 53 wins, but no one has 54 wins.
Something wrong. Somebody ain't counting right. As I call for food, I can't believe that. The Ugly Sox. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. That's funny. That's part. I love that. A good rivalry. That's supposed to be very distasteful. Very distasteful. I get it. All right. The National League. Some very strange. The NL ESPN division is very strange. The last place team, the Marlins, are 9 back. They have the best run differential in the division. That cannot have happened that many times in Major League Baseball this far into the season. Like, we're in July. We're not, it's early. You still have the season to play, but it's not that early. I mean, it's not like we're in the first month of the season. They have the best run differential in the division, and they're in last place, the Marlins. You know, the team that I've kind of enjoyed chuckle each time they lose for petty reasons is the Nationals. But I don't know if you've noticed, but the Nationals are on fire right now. The Nationals, you know, they had a medicine season last year, which was totally expected, and kind of carried over to the first 2 months of this season. But the last 3 or 4 weeks, the Nationals have been on fire. Now, they're still only one game under 500, but one game under 500 in this division gets you 4 games out. You know, the Braves are not playing well, but they're only 4.5 out. That's nothing. The Phillies have not had a good season. They're only 4.5 out. That's nothing. Now, I don't think only one team, whoever wins this division, is going to get in. But if you're the Nationals, why would you trade your really good starting pitchers to help someone else when you're still right in the middle of the race? So I don't know that Scherzer's going anywhere. I wouldn't trade Scherzer if I was the Nationals, because I could still win this division. Even though only the Phillies have a worse run differential, that doesn't really matter. And so, you know, again, the National League East is kind of on an island right now. But it could be an interesting race to see who actually wins that island. Who's the king of that little island? In the Central, the Brewers are threatening to run away with it. Now, if you look at run differential, it's not even close. They're a plus 48. No, a plus 45. I misread that number. The Reds are plus 3. Everyone else is under in the red. It is still early. I saw an interview with Matt Carpenter. The Cardinals are 9 out, and it is still a long way to go. Half of the season, only half of the season has been played. But the thing that would scare me if I'm anybody but the Brewers in that division is the Brewers have better starting pitching than all of you. And so, when your strength is pitching and you haven't really hit, if you hit at all in the second half, it would not shock me if the Brewers win this division comfortably. But we'll see. It's still early. And then obviously the National League West. I don't like the Punks, okay? That's pretty obvious. You don't give a team the nickname the Punks if you like them. And they are a very distasteful team. But I got to give them some credit, because they are having a medicine season. You know, they lost some starting pitchers for the year. They have other starting pitchers that have been out for most of the year. They've got one of the, you know, King Punk is got legal issues. You know, they're claiming he, you know, choked a woman and made her pass out or whatever. I mean, it's not a pretty thing if it's true. So we'll see. Trevor Bauer, King Punk, I call him. You know, how that's going to play out long term. If they would lose him for significant time, you know, that would have some negative repercussions for sure. But even though they've had their fair share of injuries and losing streaks, and they're certainly having a menacing season, they have 53 wins. Like, they're only a half a game out of first place. So they've had a lot of issues. They've had injuries. They've had some players underachieve. They've had, you know, pitching issues and hitting issues and injury issues. And while I can't stand them, and while I think they got more punks per capita of any team in the league on their team, you got to give them some credit. They've got 53 wins. They've got a plus 120 in run differential, and they're only a half a game out of first place. So, and then obviously the Padres are four games behind them with 50 wins. I think most people think all three of those teams will make the postseason. And all of us in baseball, if you're a baseball fan or just a competition, you know, just a fan of good, exciting competition, and I don't really think it's going to happen because I don't think the Giants, I still think the Dodgers will probably win this division. But can you imagine how much fun it would be, even if you're not a huge baseball fan? It would be much watch TV if you have, and that's an overused term, but even if you're not a baseball fan, if the Punks play the Padres in a one-game playoff in October, like if they would end up in as and they would play each other in a one-game playoff, that would be, I mean, even if you're not a huge baseball fan, that would be worth watching. That would be fun. I don't really think it's going to happen. If I had to make a prediction here halfway through the season, that it would be the Giants and the Padres, which would still be fun, but the Padres and the Punks really don't like each other. So that would be really fun if that would happen. And who knows, maybe they'll meet further in the playoffs so you get more than one game out of it. I guess you could argue that would be even more fun. But the immediacy, the do-or-die-ness of a one-game playoff would make that game, wow, that would be lots of fun. Hopefully the Astros can stay away from all that kind of stuff. That's too much pressure for an old fat man like me. All right, we'll take a commercial break. Come back and finish off today's show. Next, 103.7 The Game. Oh, welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. As we mentioned just in passing earlier, and we mentioned a little bit more when FedEx man called, but the NBA, game one in the NBA Finals is tonight. And I said last week, I'm done with making predictions for this NBA postseason. It's been the craziest, most unpredictable, and I love it, actually. I really, you know, I don't really have a dog in this fight. And so Lakers got eliminated early, and the Celtics are out. And so I don't really have a dog in this fight. So I think it's great. But in terms of sitting here trying to figure it out, I'm done trying to figure it out. But one thing I've heard a lot of people really trying to underplay, basically saying that whoever wins, they don't get much credit for winning this title because of all the injuries. But you know, what I will push back on, I understand why they're saying that, and even for someone who I would not consider myself a big Laker fan anymore, but I still pull for them to win just because I'm not a day-to-day NBA fan anymore. My definition of a fan is how much do you hurt when your team loses, and I don't hurt like I used to when the Lakers lose. You know, in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I hurt when the Lakers lose. I had to give basketball up. We've gone down and explained all that already. But anyway, even as someone who still wants the Lakers to do well, I don't think it's fair to say that the Lakers, because they're a high, because they're the Lakers, a high profile franchise, them winning in the bubble last year, they get full credit for. But either the Bucks or the Suns, if they win this year because there's a lot of injuries the year after COVID, that they don't get full credit for that. I wouldn't buy that. If you want to put asterisks to on this stuff, which is silliness, anyway, but if you want to, I think you'd have to put it on both. The Lakers win last year and this one. I just don't think it's fair to say, well, the Lakers get full credit for winning in the bubble, but because there were a lot of injuries this year, the Bucks or the Suns, they didn't really beat now. They didn't really beat anybody great, and it was just a war of attrition, so they don't get full credit. That's silliness to me. Now, with that said, will you say, if you want to say historically speaking, it's one of the least impressive title runs because they didn't beat any great teams historically, that's fine. But be careful with that, because there's somebody else that didn't beat any great teams called the Bulls of the 90s, which is my whole point of a year ago having that long discussion that most of you disagreed with. So you, if you want to go real far down that road on who did you beat to get your titles, I'll play that game again if you would like. I don't know that most of you want to go real far down that road. I just think let's not be too unfair. I'll listen to that point to a point, but let's not be too unfair. All right, I appreciate phone calls today. Get me through this first day back after our little holiday weekend. We'll see what the Astros do. Y'all have a nice day.